For WMRA News, I'm Dan Easley. Home prices have risen by nearly 50% in the last 5 years. The Dave Matthews Band is inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we visit an historic home in Stanton. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, April 23rd. Home prices in the northern Shenandoah Valley have risen by nearly 50% and rents by more than a third in just the last 5 years. Reporting on the consequences of those increases is WMRA's Henry Brannan.
It's Caitlin Heatwell's job to analyze homelessness data in the northern Shenandoah Valley, and this year she says something new is happening.
So we're really seeing a sort of a shift or a new population emerging of people who have been sort of holding on, scraping things together, and then some straw breaks the camel's back.
Heatwell works for the Western Virginia Continuum of Care, an organization that conducts yearly counts of the number of people experiencing homelessness. Data from their January count found 373 people were experiencing homelessness, a 16% increase from last year. She says that was caused by the rising cost of housing in the valley.
For people who are experiencing first-time homelessness this year, their number one reason was housing affordability, not being able to find a place that they could afford.
About 1 in 5 renters in Winchester and Harrisonburg spend more than half of their income on rent. I'm Henry Brannan.
Brannan's reporting is made possible by a partnership between WMRA, VPM News, and Report for America. Eviction filings in Virginia are down 15% from where they were before the COVID-19 pandemic. The Princeton University's Eviction Lab tracks filings in 10 states and 34 cities. New data shows that of those 10 states, Virginia has the highest filing rate, 13 for every 100 renter households. In the last year, that added up to about 140,000 eviction filings in the Commonwealth. The Supreme Court of Virginia is weighing in on how earned sentence credits are calculated for people who are incarcerated. From Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports.
Jose Garcia Vasquez was an inmate at a Virginia prison who spent years earning sentence credits to get out earlier, credits that can be earned with good behavior or by completing job training classes. But as his release date approached, the Department of Corrections said it had a different way of calculating the credits and that he had to stay in prison 18 months more. Here's Deputy Solicitor General Graham Bryant arguing the case before the Supreme Court of Virginia.
The Department of Corrections followed the General Assembly's instructions as articulated in that statute and correctly declined to award Mr. Garcia Vasquez any enhanced earned sentence credits.
Justices rejected that argument and sided with the inmate, who was represented by ACLU lawyer Vishal Agraharkar.
The job of the Attorney General and the Department of Corrections in this case is to apply the law as it is and as the General Assembly deemed to write into law, and not to interpret it in a way that keeps people wrongfully incarcerated for months, if not years, just because they wish the law were different.
He says Garcia Vasquez is not the only incarcerated person who will benefit from the Supreme Court ruling. Hundreds of people could be released earlier, an approach the Attorney General calls a criminal's first, victim's last policy. I'm Michael Pope.
James Madison University's Board of Visitors voted last week to install Charlie King as the school's interim president. King will begin serving on July 1st. The same day, outgoing President Jonathan Alger begins his leadership role at American University in Washington, D.C. King retired from JMU in 2021 after working in finance for 25 years. He'll serve as JMU's interim until a permanent president is chosen. Full disclosure, JMU's Board of Visitors holds the operating license for WMRA, and various departments at the university underwrite programming on the station. The Dave Matthews Band has been named as one of the new inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Charlottesville-based band, formed in 1991, is the only band to have 7 consecutive albums debut at number 1. The Dave Matthews Band will officially be inducted on Saturday, October 19th, at the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland, Ohio. Other 2024 inductees include Cher, Mary J. Blige, Ozzy Osbourne, and Foreigner. This spring, the historic Stanton Foundation began preserving a home with a rich and storied past. much of which is just now being unearthed. With the first in a two-part series is WMRA's Randy B. Hagee.
Let's do a bit of time traveling. There's a log house on East Beverly Street in Stanton, with walls made of hewn timbers under a corrugated tin roof, overlooking a hillside dotted with daffodils, winter aconite, and river cane. Today, it's the site of archaeological research and historic restoration. But in the late 60s, the Tate and Cabell families gathered there for holidays.
The coziest little cabin you ever want to imagine.
Lori Tate remembers visiting the house as a little girl.
I can remember as young as 6 years old going over there and spending Christmas, you know, with the sisters and everything. And they always liked to make homemade stuff. They would make fruit cakes, and boy, they would drench it with the bourbon and the brandy.
The sisters, Ma Mary and Mama Emma, as the family called them, were twins, and the third generation of Cabells to live in the house that their grandfather Edmund built shortly after the Civil War. With no biological children of their own, they took Lori Tate's mother, Jean, and her sister under their wings as goddaughters.
We all went to Augusta Street Church together. The sisters were active in the church as far as the Eastern Star, and they sang on the choir, they ushered, they did things like that.
To get to know this little log house, we have to step back further in time, on a journey through courthouse and genealogy records to find a family with roots in Amherst and Augusta counties, children born on the Middle River, and a plot of land that a black farmer purchased with 10 gold pieces in his hand. Edmund Cabell was born sometime around 1821 in Amherst County, according to records from the Freedmen's Bureau and the U.S. Census. Despite extensive searches of 19th century birth, death, and property records in two counties, I could not definitively find where Edmund came from. There was a large, wealthy, white Cabell family living in Amherst and neighboring Nelson County that enslaved more than 600 people, according to descendant and researcher Kathy Cabell Terleski. When one of these men, Landon Cabell, died in 1834, the courts recorded 51 people he enslaved, including a man named Edmund, his wife Mary, and their small daughter Maria. Terleski directed me to the location of Landon and Judith Cabell's property, close to the Nelson-Amherst line. The land where Edmund, Mary, and Maria may have lived is now covered in pine forests dotted with redbud trees and wisteria, sloping down to the James River. If this is the same Edmund as the Stanton house builder, he may have been a handful of years older than was later recorded. People's ages do vary somewhat from one document to another, and it's possible that he was forcibly separated from his first wife. This Edmund, Mary, and Maria were sold to an enslaver named Solomon Day, who fell into financial trouble near the end of his life, leaving no mention of the young family's whereabouts. What we do know is that by 1850, an Edmund Cabell and Eveline Boyers, or maybe Evelina, spellings are not consistent, had their first surviving child, George L.A. Cabell, somewhere along the Middle River in Augusta County. The couple would go on to have 9 children in all, according to various records. At least one, Rose or Rosa, died in childhood of unknown causes. In 1866, just a year after the Civil War ended and slavery was abolished in Virginia, Edmund bought a piece of land from Alexander and Sarah Taylor for $50, $10 of which have this day been paid in gold, according to the deed. The Taylors don't appear to have been enslavers, although Sarah's father, Armistead Mosby, was. 4 years later, census records show Edmund and Eveline living in the house he built with their 4 youngest children, their oldest son George, and his first wife. Eveline died at age 52 of what was called paralysis, but the fates of Edmund and several of their children are elusive. Virginia law did not require localities to record deaths from 1896 to 1912. George went on to become a respected merchant in town, who was widowed and remarried. He had 2 sons, Walter, who lost a hand and a leg in a train accident in 1908 and appears to have died young, and John, whose family lived in Stanton through the 1940s. The house was inherited by Edmund and Eveline's 6th child, Washington, aka Wash. The oldest known photograph of the house, from about 1897, shows Wash standing out front with a puppy in his arms and 5 hound dogs lying nearby. He married Emma Jackson, and the couple had 2 boys, then 20 girls. Emma died at just 39 years old, followed a few years later by her son Edmund E. when he was 16. Wash and Emma's oldest son, Harold, served in the Army during World War I. Wash worked as a janitor at the Augusta County Courthouse for 27 years, raising his young twin daughters, Emma and Mary Evelina, on his own in Jim Crow's Virginia. The girls regularly made the honor roll, and Emma graduated early at age 16. Later that year in 1920, a fire damaged much of the house, leaving char marks in the kitchen that are visible to this day. A Stanton Newsleader write-up of the accident notes that Wash's many friends, both white and black, extended their sympathies. Tomorrow, in the second part of this story, we'll follow those charred beams back to the present day. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Find photos of the Cabell House and the historic records referenced in Hagee's story at WMRA.org and on the WMRA app. For WMRA News, I'm Dan Easley. Thanks for listening.